This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Hancock, the big-budget holiday weekend movie opening tomorrow, stars Will Smith as a reluctant, rude, unpopular superhero. Our guest, Jason Bateman, co-stars as Ray, a public relations expert who takes on the abrasive Hancock as a client after the superhero rescues him. The movie also co-stars Charlize Theron as Ray's wife and is directed by Peter Berg, who produced both the movie and TV versions of Friday Night Lights. Jason Bateman has drawn acclaim recently for small but impressive supporting roles in such movies as Juno, in which he and Jennifer Garner played the couple planning to adopt Juno's baby, and Smoke and Aces. Those roles came after his 2003 TV showcase role in the Fox sitcom Arrested Development. He starred as Michael Bluth, the one seemingly sane character surrounded by a gaggle of crazy family members. But long before that, Jason Bateman tasted stardom as a child, beginning in the early 80s with regular roles on Little House on the Prairie and Silver Spoons. Our TV critic David Bianculli spoke to Jason Bateman. Let's start with a clip from Hancock. After the drunken Hancock saves Ray, Jason Bateman's character, Ray invites Hancock over for dinner with his wife and son.
Aaron, pal, how was school today, huh?
Fine.
Yeah, no more problems with that bully Michael?
Michelle.
Michelle.
No, it's girl's name.
No, I know.
It's French.
Yeah, Michelle Hancock is this...
Hancock.
Michelle is this neighborhood bully.
We've been trying to teach Aaron a little bit about conflict resolution.
Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, turn, you have a cheek, all
that's
that.
That's exactly mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm. Well, just never turn that one, all right? Never let them punk you.
Got it.
Okay, Aaron, eat your food.
Well, you deal with bullies. You take your right foot, bring it right up, catch him in his
little... Please, oh, just stop. Michelle is not a man, okay? He's a little boy, and his parents happen to be going through a really, really bad divorce, and that's why he's acting up. And maybe you don't know this, but not everything in this world gets resolved with brute force. Not everything has to be bang, scream, blood, more blood, you know,
Angel,
just destruction.
Okay. She watches so much news that sometimes it gets to be a little too much.
You got a toilet?
Yep. Yeah, just pass the fridge.
Did he just take the whiskey bottle to the bathroom?
Do you want him to kill us all?
Jason Bateman, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Your new movie is Hancock. It stars Will Smith in the title role, and he's playing a guy with superpowers, but a very bad attitude and reputation. And you play Ray, a public relations guy who tries to polish Hancock's image. I was really surprised when I saw a preview of the movie that you were as much the leading man as Will Smith was. I mean, it's your character's story as much as it is his. So how did you get this role, and how long ago did you know you had it?
Well, I did a film with Peter Berg called The Kingdom, and we were working together for quite some time, and you can accrue quite a number of incriminating photos on somebody when, when you're spending that much time with them. So I cashed those in for this part.
What was it about Peter Berg? I mean, he also did the movie and TV versions of Friday Night Lights, and he really seems to know how to get great natural stuff out of his actors, and he responds to actors where he seems to be looking for something particular in them. Why did you two guys connect?
I'm not sure. I would hate to look too closely at it for fear of screwing it up, but my guess would be that his approach to directing is fairly similar to my approach to acting, in that we try to keep things kind of simple and we don't try to overthink it and make it too precious. Whatever it is, it does seem to work. He likes to keep things very, very natural and very, very loose. I mean, he does like to get the scene shot as written, but once that is done, he definitely encourages you to go off the page and try to find some of that natural stuff that ends up being pretty funny.
You have said that you have sort of a plan for building stardom the second time, you know, going for roles that aren't necessarily above the title but that appeal to you. And you can see that plan in Juno. I was really impressed by the shadings that you gave to that character, which starts off as a very likable character and needs to be a very likable character and then slowly turns over the course of the movie. That seems like, even on paper, it would have been a wonderful role to play. But I wonder, was it a wonderful role to think about how to play?
Yeah, you know, reading the script, there's a final scene, or sort of the peak scene for my character with Juno, where we're dancing in this basement, and things get a little creepy, and I let her know that I'm leaving my wife, and the dialogue as written, as read, points you, the reader, and me, the actor, trying to figure out who this guy is and what his intentions are in all the scenes preceding this, in a particular direction, a direction of, well, I think he might be trying to hit on this girl. And Jason Reitman, the director, he and I, we had discussions about this quite a bit leading up to shooting that scene through the rehearsal process and in all the days of shooting before we got to that day. And I wanted to know, am I trying to sleep with this girl? Am I trying, you know, am I hitting on her? Mm-hmm. Or am I just looking for a peer relationship, sort of a connection? Because if it is the latter, then that informs how I play the scenes beforehand with my wife, and if it is the former, that's going to inform how I play the scenes with Juno, that precede that scene. So,
well, before you say which way you decided, let's hear the scene. This is Jason Bateman and Ellen Page in Juno.
I'm leaving, Vanessa.
What?
Getting a place in the city, got it all planned. This is something I've been wanting to do for a long time.
No.
No?
No, you definitely can't do that. That's one big fat sack of... No.
What is the matter?
What the... I mean, you guys are supposed to take care of this, you know?
Thought you'd be cool with this.
Cool. I want things to be perfect. I don't want them to be shitty and broken like everyone else's family. God, look, I'll have the baby, and Vanessa's gonna be so happy. You just...
Baby's not going to fix everything. Besides, I don't know if I'm even ready to be a father.
But you're old.
How do you think of me? You know, why are you over here?
I just like being a piece of furniture in your weird life.
This is what my life has become. I mean, you know, I got stuff in boxes. You know, I'm underground. That's appealing to you?
Is this my fault?
No.
Is Vanessa, like, mad at you because of me or something?
It's got nothing to do with it. Vanessa and I aren't in love anymore.
Well, you were in love when you married her. And if you're in love once, you can be in love again. Like my friend Leah, who's been with the same guy, like, four different times. You're just not trying hard enough.
Such an idiot. I can't believe what an idiot
I am. No, you know what, Mark? Oh, just do not divorce your wife. Will you please just do me a solid and stay with Vanessa?
You're so young.
All right. So what did you decide? How did you decide to play it?
Basically, the short answer is I went for a 70-30 sort of ratio there between – and the 70 being going for a friendship and a connection there. As a result of being lonely in my marriage, and the 30% was somewhat more, you know, lascivious, but only perhaps developing maybe 2 or 3 months down the road. So it came as a result of the conversations with Jason Reitman, the director, and trying to figure out what we should be playing here. Now, he was consistently saying to me, "I'd like for you to play both." I understood where he was coming from, and ultimately that did work. But it was frustrating to me as an actor that I didn't want to get caught in no man's land, and I needed to know which side he wanted me to be, and then from there I would play it somewhat vague or ambiguous. So he ended up saying to me, "Well, you know, why don't you just decide and just know what my desires are?" And so the way that we went about doing it was we shot the scene, that particular scene, about, I don't know, let's say 10 times. It might have actually been exactly 10. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, in the first take, I'm going to play as meek and as vulnerable and as solicitous of friendship with her as possible. And by the 10th take, I will be a real creep, and, you know, I will come across like I'm trying to, you know, make it all happen right there on the couch right then. And the agreement was that once he gets in the editing room, he would cobble together a performance out of those 10 takes. And he did that, and I thank him so much for putting the scene together like that and helping me execute that fence riding that he wanted so badly.
Let's get back to the interview our TV critic David Bianculli recorded with Jason Bateman. Bateman's new film Hancock opens tomorrow.
I've got to say this in a way that sounds like the compliment I intend it to be rather than the insult that you might take it as.
Oh, boy.
But
here it comes.
No. I've been a TV critic forever. Silver Spoons I reviewed when it came out.
Wow.
By the time Arrested Development came out, I was so pleasantly stunned by your performance in the pilot for that show and then everything you did since then that I have to admit that part of the joy was I didn't know that you had it in you. And
and
I know that sounds kind of insulting. I really don't mean it that way.
No, I get what you're saying.
And I'm wondering, did you know you had it in you?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, you hope to sort of talk yourself into that. But, you know, my mother is British, and so she gave me this very sort of dry, sarcastic sense of humor. And that works in some projects better than others. It's more appropriate. In multi-camera television, in sitcoms, you know, when you have a studio audience, there is an element of performing that should not be in single-camera comedy. And when I say that, I mean shows in the format of Arrested Development or Curb Your Enthusiasm or, you know, Sex and City, whatever, you know, that are shot like a movie where there isn't a studio audience and it's not a three-wall set or a laugh track. So I was basically doing my job and fitting the format and fitting the genre when I was doing what I was doing on Silver Spoons or It's Your Move or The Hogan Family or any of the other sort of multi-camera, you know, pilots or shows that I was doing. And that was also coupled with me getting older and having a different sense of humor and becoming a bit more cynical or sarcastic or adult. And the writing supported that. And almost most importantly, I had Jeffrey Tambor. And this is a guy who taught me a lot about, to quote him, not winking. You know, he's got a brand of humor that is very much based in not winking, in playing everything deadly serious. And that is the humor, that somebody would say something so absurd with such a straight face and believe it so thoroughly and deliver it so dramatically that you just empathize with this idiot so much that he's so dumb. To treat this subject so seriously that generates the laughter, as opposed to, you know, a pie in the face or some sort of big broad piece of comedy, which is equally good, but certainly not the brand of humor we were doing here. And it just so happened that Jeffrey had the first line of the first scene of the first show that we did. And he really set the comedic tone for this show, and I fell right into it because I guess I had that desire to do that kind of comedy, and it finally fit in this product.
Let's hear a clip from Arrested Development, one that has you acting opposite Jeffrey Tambor, who plays your father in the show.
Now listen, we can't just go in there and plead not guilty. We have to have someone big behind us, our own private Matlock. So I made some calls, and I got him.
Got who?
Andy Griffith. Yeah, you never saw Matlock.
Not a real attorney, Dad.
Now, for $10,000, he'll actually sit behind us in court and read the paper. For $15,000, he'll actually sit at the defense table. For $20,000, he'll twice lean forward and whisper something in your ear. Oh, white suit, that's extra.
Well, that's an awful lot of money for the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
The juries love him.
That's just it, Dad. There won't be a jury because we are pleading guilty.
I am not guilty. Oh, I didn't want to tell you this. Are you ready for the bombshell?
Andy Griffith wasn't the bombshell?
I'm a patsy. I was set up by the Brits. A group of British builders operating outside the OC contacted me for a partnership to build homes overseas. I did not know they meant Iraq.
We've got a picture of you with Saddam Hussein.
That was Jeffrey Tambor and Jason Bateman in a clip from Arrested Development. What did you learn about yourself and your acting skills and strengths by doing that show?
Basically that you can get it done doing less. And just trust that the camera is watching, and you don't need to do a whole lot. Obviously, if the writing is there, you just simply need to open up your mouth and say it and not look in the camera. When you look at somebody like Michael Cera, who, you know, is a guy who I think he was 14 when we started that show. Mm-hmm. You know, he had that already. He had that he had such a strong sense of his face and his levels, and he's just so gifted at such an early age. That was really, really fortunate that we happened to find him for that character. I mean, I remember us saying, you know, boy, do I look old enough to be his father? Mm-hmm. Because I think at the time we started, I was 35, 34, whatever it was, you know, so I had him when I was 20. I mean, I guess that's not preposterous, but it didn't look like he looked a little bit older than we imagined the actor. Mm-hmm. For the part. But very quickly we got to, well, you know, but hell, are you going to find anybody as good as Michael Cera? And, you know, the quick answer was no, and away we went.
When you're on a set with Michael Cera in Arrested Development or Ellen Page in Juno or any other young actor, because you were a child star, do you have or do you resist the temptation to dispense advice?
I don't resist, but really I haven't had to do that with anybody. You know, Michael's got his head firmly screwed on and is not a real Hollywood guy at all. And I don't know. It's such a tough business for adults. And if you're a kid, it's even tougher. There's a lot of people that are allowing you to be a brat. And the more sort of psychological side of it is somewhat dangerous too, in that you are trying to learn how to be different people at a time when you haven't yet figured out who you are. Mm-hmm. And that can generate some schizophrenia. Yeah, I mean, depending on how good you are at it and how sort of deep you want to go in the process, you can kind of mess yourself up. I had some confusing years. I mean, I don't want to say that I developed schizophrenia, but I certainly found a lot of different parts of myself that were becoming very, very fully developed, different personalities that I could justify wearing and living when I might not be instinctually feeling them. So, you know, just rolling out of bed and living with the mood that you are instinctively in sometimes was a challenge. And I had a tough time holding on to teachers. You know, I went through a long list of studio teachers. It got to a point where they wouldn't even send one to the set and sort of shut down at one point.
And these are one-on-one tutors, right? So when you're...
Yeah. So there was nowhere to hide when I was being a little bastard. There's a lot of brats out there, and I was certainly one of them.
Your sister, Justine, is also a sitcom veteran from Family Ties, and just as you have reinvented yourself in the last few years, she has too lately, recurring roles on Men in Trees and Desperate Housewives, where she's done very well, and she even guest starred on one Arrested Development. Do you two ever talk about these second act careers you're building and how you're doing it?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been really fortunate that we've been going through this thing all at the same time, and our careers have really paralleled and been able to have somebody so close to talk it all over with. And she voluntarily took quite a bit of time off when she had her two kids, Duke and Gia. And she wanted to be there for those first few years, and now is very eager to get back into it. it. But, you know, that is a process that it doesn't happen overnight. And, you know, unlike how it did happen for her on Family Ties, I think she was doing some modeling when I was doing, I think I was on to It's Your Move at that point. And she wanted to start being able to maybe stay in nicer hotels or fly maybe in first class or something, going to New York to do some of these modeling things. And so she wanted to start doing some commercial work. And I think she booked 3 commercials and then read for the pilot of A Family Ties. She read for a guest star part in the pilot, and they liked her so much they wanted her to read for the role of Mallory, which was a series regular, and she got it. You know, this time around, it's a little bit more of the traditional path and pace, and she's fine with it. You know, she's not a rookie. She understands the way the business works and is taking her time and trying to pick the right kind of roles that will generate you know, the kind of career she'd like to have now.
Well, Jason Bateman, thank you very much for being on Fresh Air.
Thank you very much for having me.
Jason Bateman speaking with our TV critic David Bianculli. Bateman's new movie, Hancock, opens tomorrow.